like oh.
This is Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Welcome back to Ottawa Now. We're going to talk about the timeline on getting younger kids vaccinated. What happens when younger kids can get the COVID-19 vaccine? How do we prioritize that? How do we manage to get them COVID-19 shots while also making sure that they're getting their other routine shots? I'm talking about the catch up to get flu shots, to get rubella, hepatitis B, measles, mumps. And you know, the regular shots for kids have really been derailed by the school closures and by public health measures, according to a new report by researchers at the University of Toronto and from McMaster University. Joining us right now, Kate Allen is on the line, co-author of the report, postdoctoral fellow at the Center for Vaccine Preventable Diseases at U of T. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
Kate, tell our listeners, especially those who might not have experienced this firsthand, what we've seen when it comes to the routine childhood immunizations over the course of the pandemic.
Yeah, well, I think we know, especially school-based immunization clinics have really very often been canceled or rescheduled. And so in grade 7, there's 3 vaccines that we deliver in schools in Ontario. That's for meningitis, human papillomavirus, HPV, and Hep B, hepatitis B. And so all those vaccines really have been rescheduled. So that's a challenge as far as, you know, up to, you know, 2 cohorts of students, especially in grade 7, would have missed many of those vaccine doses. So that's for sure a challenge. And then we also know that many children aren't coming into primary care settings, pediatricians' offices, family doctors' offices to receive their shots as well, because maybe they've been nervous about, you know, exposure to COVID and things like that. So there's definitely been a lot of missed doses. I think, you know, thinking about the magnitude, we don't really have good data yet to know exactly what that might look like. But I think we have a good sense that there's some challenges and some opportunities for catch up as well.
So then what happens for families if the parents are scrambling to catch up and they have these other jabs the kids need, but then at the same time, they're eligible to get the COVID-19 vaccine? Which one do you prioritize?
Yeah, so I think right now people would prioritize the COVID vaccine when it's available for their children. So 5 to 11 year olds are not yet eligible for the vaccine, mm-hmm. and also under 5. That's something that's probably coming in the coming months. But in the meantime, you know, receiving those routine vaccines that were missed, potentially at your family doctor, would be something that parents could do right now. And in some public health units, so for instance, in Toronto, we have catch-up immunization clinics for those routine vaccines. So for children in grade 7 and up, they can receive some of those missed vaccinations in sort of mass immunization centers, some of which we've used actually for COVID vaccination as well.
When school is out and we're not seeing those school-based clinic programs, does it tend to disadvantage certain families or kids of certain backgrounds over others?
Yeah, that's a great point and something we really talked about a lot in our report, because a school-based immunization program is really a universal approach to immunization. And so it really overcomes some of the barriers that families might have as far as, you know, transportation, parents being able to take time off work to attend these immunization appointments, childcare, things like that. And so I think when those school-based programs aren't available and families are catching up, you know, at their family doctor, well, some families are not well connected to the healthcare system. Maybe they don't have a regular care provider, things like that. And so those tend to fall along sort of socioeconomic lines. Sometimes families who are move around a lot or are new to Canada, aren't well connected to the healthcare system, they might be the ones to sort of fall through the cracks when those universal school-based programs aren't available.
So your report has actually recommended a number of steps here, putting this on the government, requesting that the government do a couple of things. What should it be doing?
Yeah, so there's a few things. I mean, I think, first of all, as I mentioned, you know, we don't have a great sense of actually how many missed doses there are. In Ontario, there's a few different sort of repositories of vaccine record information. And so having a centralized registry would be really helpful to be able to sort of estimate what those missed doses are. And that's something that we don't have right now. So that's one recommendation. That's sort of a longer term thing. But in the short term, I think having those routine immunizations accessible widely for families families. So, you know, as I talked about, not every family is well connected to a regular care provider. So we need to make sure there's opportunities for those catch-up immunizations to happen in community-based settings, at pharmacies, in some cases in schools, and community clinics, because we really need to remove sort of any barriers that there might be for families. And even some children are still pursuing remote learning as well. So even if some of those school-based clinics come back, there's some children that wouldn't be able to access those. So I think, you know, a really important piece is making sure that we have multiple avenues to make it really convenient and accessible for parents and kids to be able to access these missed routine immunizations.
Kate Allen, thanks so much for coming on the program.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Kate Allen, postdoctoral fellow at the Center for Vaccine Preventable Diseases at the University of Toronto and the co-author of that report, which talks all about maintaining immunizations and the regular routine vaccines that kids normally get. Talking about school-age children, and a lot of them normally get those vaccines connected to a school-based clinic. So there's been a whole bunch of disruptions because the kids have been out of school, especially in Ontario, where they've been out of school a lot. Thankfully, they're back in school now. 416, News Talk 580 CFRA. When we come back, heard a lot of people talking about how the pandemic has brought us together. It's unified us. It's made us stronger. It's made us more humane. And then you hear about stories like the one that Colton Prail did last night, where pharmacists and family doctors are saying they're facing harassment. And it really brings you down. It's so disheartening. We're going to talk about that coming up next. Golden.
You're listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
For a while, we thought this pandemic is really bringing out the best in people. Human beings are great, aren't they? They're coming together, they're banging on pots and pans, we're doing good things to help our neighbors, we're united against this horrific virus, we're thinking about each other, we're protecting and caring for one another. And then all of a sudden, boom, that bubble really burst in the fourth wave, didn't it? The stakes could not be higher, and yet here we are. Here we are, and a bunch of us are just behaving like baboons. Let's take inventory, shall we? We've got the hospital protests, the boycotting and bullying of businesses, people leaving fake one-star reviews. For what? For what? For hosting vaccine clinics? For enforcing a vaccine certificate program that they didn't even come up with? Basically following government regulations? My God. And now we're hearing about a new thing. Here's the fresh story that we have as of last night. We're hearing about the harassment of doctors and pharmacists. And it's been going on for a while. Yesterday, we had Dr. Ali Khan Abdullah on the show. He's a family doctor in Manotick. And he told me on the show that his staff are facing harassment. And they're facing harassment for a number of reasons. Some people come in, they want ivermectin. Some people come in and they want a medical exemption for the vaccine and they don't deserve one.
It drains me. You kind of wonder, why am I doing this? And why am I being the person that's right at the coalface, making sure that people do the right thing? So that's number one. And number two, every day now we have staff that want to quit. We've called the cops on people, right? We've said, look, I'm going to leave the room or I'm going to hang up on you. We've done those things as well. It never works that well. I'll tell you honestly, no one likes to be told no. No one likes to be told, I'm not going to listen to you, I'm not going to talk to you. We're supposed to take the abuse.
And they shouldn't have to take the abuse. Not that it needs to be said, but does it need to be said? I guess it does need to be said because it's happening. And doctors are getting it. And pharmacists, unsurprisingly, they're on the front lines too. They're also getting it. They're also saying that they face abuse and harassment on the job. Justin Bates is the CEO of the Ontario Pharmacists Association, and he said this has been a widespread issue right across the province. He gives us a sense of what it's like.
What we're seeing is people demanding to have fake certificates, so asking a pharmacist essentially to put in fraudulently that they had the fully vaccinated two doses and give them the receipt. So those are certainly, when denied, they get angry. And we're seeing verbal abuse. We're seeing people get very upset. So we've gone from pots and pans and showing love, support for healthcare providers to angry protests.
And he was pretty clear. He stressed that there have been some legitimate questions, people that come in and want guidance and advice, and that's perfectly fine. Not everyone comes in and is an angry anti-vaxxer. However, he said this is different. And other people are coming in and they're noting that ivermectin is out there and they want to get it, and then they're being denied ivermectin prescriptions.
We have had several instances where pharmacists have had to refuse to fill a prescription, which is within their authority to do so, because the patient walks in with that prescription. So there has been some instances where some physicians are writing this still, although it's very few and far between at this stage. And people do get angry with that as well.
And ivermectin, by the way, in case, you know, you missed the whole ivermectin culture wars thing. It's an anti-parasitic medicine for both humans and animals, but it started being promoted as a COVID treatment, and that is not proven. Scientists are studying whether this deworming medicine could have an impact on COVID-19, but there's been a whole frenzy over ivermectin. Dr. Abdullah echoed that sentiment and was saying that it's been very difficult to deal with people, to work through these reactions when pharmacists and healthcare workers like him are trying to help.
It's really the stress of it all. It's the fact that you're trying to guide people using diplomacy, using respect, using science, and, you know, trying to guide people. And they're just angry. They're upset. They want things their own way. And they're frustrated. I know where they're coming from. I can see it from their eyes and their actions and their body language. But it's just too much.
What do you say about this? Abusing a doctor because he won't give you a medical exemption. You're not getting a medical exemption because you don't need one. Newsflash. There's criteria. You don't just walk in. This isn't like Halloween candy. The doctors aren't just handing out the medical exemptions. You're talking with a doctor. Are you really surprised? The vaccine is the easiest way to give yourself some protection against this virus, and it's free. So what did you think the doctor was going to say? Yeah, sure. Skip out on it, man. I mean, the doctor's going to recommend that you get vaccinated, and if you don't want to, okay, that's fine. I mean, that's your decision. The doctor can't force you to get vaccinated. But if you're not eligible for an exemption, you're not. Face the facts. If you're in Ottawa right now, if you're unvaccinated in Ottawa, you're 11 times more likely to contract COVID-19 than somebody who is fully vaccinated. You want to accept that? Okay, that's your call. You make that decision for yourself. But you don't get to make it for the person eating dinner next to you at a restaurant. You don't get to make it for the gym owner who's desperate to keep their business open. And you certainly do not have the right to verbally abuse or threaten a doctor when they say, no, you don't get an exemption. Get a grip, grow up, and move on. That's the end. It's repugnant. I'm out. She's feeling zesty today, folks. She's feeling mighty zesty. 4:28, we're going to take a short break. Maddie Eisenberg will be joining us with Time Saver Traffic in just a number of minutes. We've got your newscast coming up. Keep it locked to News Talk 580 CFRA.
You're listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
4:37, welcome back. Canada's Catholic bishops announced that they're going to give $30 million to help support survivors of the residential school system. This is a pledge that has gone public this week, and we wanted to get some reaction to the pledge from the Canadian Conference of Catholic Bishops. They said the funds will be doled out over 5 years. This comes as this apology came from the conference to Indigenous people for the suffering endured in Canada's residential schools, most of which were run by the Catholic Church. Joining us now, the MPP for Kwantlen and the official opposition critic for Indigenous and Treaty Relations, Saul Mamakwa. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
I should also add that you're a residential school survivor. What is your reaction to this?
You know, it just reminds me of, you know, I think what happened at residential school is, it's genocide and, you know, children, Indigenous children being ripped away from from their families, communities, and their way of life. And, you know, genocide is a big deal. And, And I think, you know, the churches, governments have never done enough to address their roles in the horrors of what happened in the residential schools. And I think the apology is one thing. Those are words. But I think it's really important to, you know, have some action behind those words, whereby, you know, they, you know, initiate some type of, you know, whether it's a fund for healing initiatives, because what has happened here recently, the finding of remains of children across the country, you know, is opening wounds. And, you know, like I don't know, as an individual, like I went to residential school. It was a Mennonite school, but I don't know if I would, if I can accept that apology right now.
What about the announcement from the Canadian Conference of Catholic Bishops about the money specifically? Money over 5 years, funding initiatives at the local level. What is your response to that?
I think, you know, I know previously there was an announcement of $25 million that they had committed to, and I think they only raised about $4 million, I believe. And, you know, again, you know, do I trust them? Do I trust the response to, you know, again, we've been lied to before from these institutions. And I think we need to be able to see these initiatives at the community level, at the First Nation level, to be able to come with a way to heal these wounds, you know, like, and that's so important, because when I talk about, you know, we never agreed to lose our spirituality. And I believe the greatest wound of wounds is for Indigenous people, is taking our spirituality, and we need to be able to address that. And but I think the intergenerational trauma that has been inflicted on Indigenous people across the country, we need to be able to see some type of community wellness plans that will address these intergenerational impacts.
They said the funding for the projects will be determined in consultation with Inuit populations, Métis, and First Nations in each region, that it's an ongoing conversation. They also, though, encourage the parishes across Canada to participate and to amplify the effort. Is that an appropriate invitation in your view? Does it make sense to you for the parishes across Canada to get involved?
Certainly. I think no matter what denomination, no matter what churches, I think there's certainly, they had their roles. As I said, you know, I went to a Mennonite one, and, you know, that's, you know, and I think that's, you know, it's encouraging. But no, but I, again, you know, I have to be able to believe, to be able to accept that we need action. We need to be able to see the resources in the communities directly, you know, some type of direct funding mechanisms to be able to fund these healing initiatives or wellness for the communities.
This comes ahead of National Truth and Reconciliation Day, marked for the first time on September the 30th. What are you going to be thinking about that day?
I think I'm going to be acknowledging, reflecting the children that never came home. And I think it's important to also, you know, acknowledge that, you know, how the policies of racism and oppression, which equals colonialism, you know, how it impacted Indigenous people across the country. And I think when we talk about, like, if this happened to 20,000 non-Indigenous children that died after being stolen forcibly from their parents, from their families, we would not be having this call. We would not be having this debate. And I think, you know, Canadians across the country, Ontarians across the province need to be able to remember reflect on the real history of this country. You know, the other Canada, the other Ontario, because that's, you know, we continue to see these oppressive and colonial policies that still are in practice today. And I think, yeah, I think it'll be important to be able to remember those children that never came home.
Salma Makwa, thank you so much.
Miigwech, thank you for having me.
Salma Makwa, a residential school survivor himself, the MPP for Kwantlen and the official opposition critic for Indigenous and treaty relations. 4:44 on Ottawa Now. We're going to take a short break here, heading up to our traffic and weather. When we come back, our question of the day, get in while you can, answer this question. Do you think this independent review, the one that is eventually coming, a safety review for LRT, is going to be the ticket to get to the bottom of the problems? I'd love to hear from you on that. It's interesting because first they said this company is doing the safety review. Then there was a bunch of backlash that kind of backfired on them. And then today they came and they said, nope, actually that company's not going to do it anymore. They did an about face. And now we're waiting to find out who's going to do the safety review. But we had a city councillor on earlier, Sean Menard, who said, that's not enough. We have to do more. We have to go back to the very beginning, look through everything that has gone on. We need a judicial inquiry. And a lot of other city councillors, he believes, support that. He also said he doesn't think the train should be running again until there's a full inspection. AKA, take it apart, look at it. And he acknowledged that would be a pain to do, but he said he thinks it's necessary. What do you think? 4:45, that's our question of the day. That's coming up in about 15 minutes from now. Take my hand and hold on. Tell me everything that you need to say. 'Cause I know how it feels.
This is Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA. Agree or disagree, we want to hear from you. Text us at 580-580. Please include your name and where you're texting from.
4:52. In India, if you want to write your teacher exams, you're going to have to take off your shoes. Seriously, Chris, no shoes. Then you can write the test. What is this? It's like going through the airport or something, going through security. Except no, instead of getting to travel and go on vacation or a trip, instead you get a test, which seems like a somewhat crappier deal. But a lot of these people are doing this because there is a cheating problem. Okay. This is the issue. So 1.6 million men and women traveled from their homes over the weekend, going really great distances in some cases, to take exams in 4,000 centers. And there's not that many teaching jobs. So what that means is that becoming a teacher is highly competitive. People are elbowing each other to get to this exam. And as a result, they want to do well. And the officials want to make sure that everything is done fairly. But a couple of group members or a couple of would-be teachers were found to be acting suspiciously outside the exam hall. And it turns out they were testing and they were using their shoes to basically bring in the answers. They had Bluetooth devices that they had hidden in the soles of their shoes. And the devices were going to be able to receive calls that would then be sent wirelessly to tiny little receivers hidden in their ears. So somebody was feeding them the answers through their shoes, or that was the plan, according to the report out of India, was the accomplices outside would call in and they would use the person's flip-flop and just tell them the answers through an earpiece.
That's so Maxwell Smart, really.
Love that.
Yeah.
Love that. And, you know, in one case, they caught a student teacher after the exam. And they had to take him to the doctor to identify and remove the Bluetooth device from his ear. So for some of them, it didn't go so well. It was a problem. And it's been such a bad problem there that even internet access was cut in the area of the exams to prevent cheating. And as a result of that, people have been trying to find a way around it. And the way around it was apparently through the sole of your shoe. I was never a cheater in high school or elementary school. And we've talked about me as a child before. I wasn't exactly an angelic cherub or anything. I'm not insinuating that, but I never did cheat. Corey, were you a cheater in high school or in elementary school? Did you ever cheat on a test?
No, I don't actually think I did. I had a bit of the opposite reputation where it was, oh, Corey, like, people would tell me that they were doing that to me. They were like, oh.
Oh, they were looking off your answers.
Yeah. Or I would also, I was like really, I would just give out notes and stuff to people just for free. So I was doing a lot of the legwork for everybody.
You were the note taker and you were sharing that around?
Yeah.
That's so sweet of you. Did you feel kind of bullied into it, or you wanted to do it out of the good of your heart?
No, I mean, at first I think people were asking because they just didn't want to have to do it. So they're like, well, you've already done it, so why not just, you know, be cool? But I think for me, you know, if it's going to make like my friends and peers succeed, then sure, right? Like, if their notes
suck,
you're
so sweet.
Like, then why not
give
them better notes?
This is like the group project that nobody got assigned, but Corey's ready to put the team on his back. He's like, climb aboard, everyone. I gotcha. I mean, that's really nice, Corey.
Yeah.
That's really sweet.
I will say this isn't cheating, but I do have a trying to keep technology secret story, which is that I bought a hoodie.
Are we going to go back to the cottage or the camping again?
No. But
because you already told us that
this
story.
This is school. This is school related still. As a student in eighth grade, I bought a sweater that had earbuds at the end of the hoodie strings. I don't know why they were selling that. And there was an aux cable that you could plug into, like, in the pocket of the sweater.
So you were sneaking your headphones on?
Yeah, the sweater sleeves had thumb holes. So if you just put the string there,
yeah.
And just sort of leaned on your hand.
Okay.
It was just in your ear. You were just covering up the fact that it was in your ear.
Okay, so then what you're telling me is that you were the note taker voluntarily for your group of friends, but then you weren't actually listening, so the teacher's talking and you're just doodling?
I gotta be honest.
And nobody's getting some quality notes after all of that
because you're
listening to music?
I quit doing that because I was worried I was gonna get caught. I quit really fast. I was like, oh no!
Were you doing it when the teacher was talking or just when you were supposed to be working quietly?
I dabbled with while the teacher was talking, but it stressed me out too much.
Corey, this is somewhat evil. I feel like you're sabotaging. First you go to your friends. I'll be the note taker for all of you. Don't worry. I'm so studious. And then the next thing you're listening to music. It's like the teacher's talking and you're listening to, I don't know.
I gave up on that part.
Nine Inch Nails. I feel like that was really off. I've never actually met you in person, so I have no idea what kind of music you listen to.
In grade 8, I don't think it was Nine Inch Nails.
You don't think it was Nine Inch Nails?
But let's picture that to set the scene. But no, honestly, I had to get off that. I couldn't maintain the bad boy image for very long. I stopped doing really quickly.
Oh, yeah, the bad boy image. So bad. He's listening to music and the teacher's talking.
In only one ear. What a
in
rebel.
In only one ear. With a secret sweater that hides the device.
And the audio quality probably sucked, right?
His name is Corey Price. He doesn't care about notes, and he doesn't care about school, and he doesn't care about audio quality. Oh my gosh. Corey.
That was great.
That's amazing.
Thank you.
You know, I was supposed to ask you about Halloween candy. That was the whole purpose of me bringing you on.
Which I'm already
buying.
Now
this is just taken on. So this is the thing. I wanted to bring you on because I've been very tempted.
Right.
The last couple times at the grocery store. And I always think, I want to get it now. I want to buy the Halloween candy now because we're in a neighborhood now with a lot of young families. I love, love, love our neighborhood. And so I want to be prepared for Halloween. I don't want to be the house with the crappy candy. So I want the good selection. So therefore, I want to buy them early. But then I'm wrestling with myself because if I buy the Halloween candy now, it's going to be gone. I will eat it all.
Right. So my solution has been, I went to the store and saw that they were already selling Halloween candy and bought some and then proceeded to just eat it myself.
Right.
That's exactly what happened.
But did you buy it with the intention of handing it out or did you buy it with the intention of having little Halloween treats for yourself?
I bought it with the intent of having Halloween treats for myself. They were used for their intended purpose. Where I live now, I actually don't know what kind of expectations
kids.
We should have for that.
What do you mean by expectations? Of
like
what
how
you
many
have to
people?
Hand out?
Yeah, like how many kids and stuff. Because last year it wasn't really happening.
Yeah.
So I don't actually know.
I was so sad last year, but I lived downtown last year, and I lived in a neighborhood that not a lot of kids were trick or treating.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to attract the kids by putting lots of lights on and making it look all spooky, and then we didn't even get a single one.
Standing
I was
at the
so
end of the
sad.
Driveway, just shaking a bag of candy, like.
kids gather round. Hey, maybe that's what I'll do. Maybe we'll be the haunted house where we go all out.
There's always
those
one.
People.
Yeah, there's got to be one. Just
and there... I don't think there's one in this neighborhood.
No, you're filling a need by doing that, but there is a line. Like, don't like there are people who go just that little bit.
What's too far?
I think there was. I had an experience once where the people were like so in character that they were like getting up and like kind of like almost like pushing people a little bit.
Intimidating the children.
Yeah, and I was like, maybe that's so don't intimidate the children. I think if that's our baseline, I think we're in good shape for you to set up a nice.
I'm concerned that you feel like you need to give me this advice, Corey.
This is advice for everybody listening. Just don't.
This is not just
don't intimidate trick or treaters.
Not tailored to me. No, I will be very welcoming. Maybe I'll go get some spooky lights.
Yeah, I think if you could just do it up, you know, just really kind of
do it up.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Let us know. Have you bought your Halloween candy yet? Am I jumping the gun here by trying to buy my Halloween candy too early? I know if I do it, Corey, it's going to be gone.
That's the thing. Yeah. And I learned that lesson already.
I think we probably got to wait till after Thanksgiving at the very least. 5 p.m. on News Talk 580 CFRA. We'll be right back.
Don't we love it now? Everyone's waiting for the next surprise. Skeleton Jack might catch you in the back and scream like a banshee, make you jump out of your skin. This is Halloween, everybody.